Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Claire.
Let's talk at the same time.
Yes, let's.
Oh, here we are back in the studio.
Yeah, it's great to be here with you.
Yeah. And we're going to continue our discussion about stress, right?
Yeah. So the title of this talk is stress really that powerful? And, you know, how it can be easy to just underestimate really how stress can negatively affect our health. And so that's what we've been talking about. We talked about at the last show, just the myriad of ways, the areas in our body that get affected by stress. And so we're going to continue that today, but just to briefly mention and to inspire you all to tune into the last show, you can listen to on Voice of Esh on website. Basically, heart disease is what we talked about, diabetes, overeating, digestion, fetal and child development, and then growth, and as well as osteoporosis, as all things that stress affects.
Wow. And I know stress kept coming up on our first six shows, which are archived on our website, as you mentioned. And so I'm glad we're doing this, and I'm interested to hear about other things that stress can influence. But what it does seem like is that it can have an influence almost anywhere in our physical or even our psychological bodies.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very, very powerful.
So, yeah. I don't want to get stressed out about it, though.
I know. I'm sorry. We're not trying to stress our listeners out. And, you know, we're going to, our next show, we're going to talk about tools to deal with stress.
Great.
Yeah, because it doesn't have to be negative. It's just that chronic stress where we're not dealing with using our tools to deal with the stress is when it becomes a problem.
Well, just as we get started, let me remind our listeners that you're listening to KVSH 101.9 FM. And it's Claire and Lisa, the Island Health Sisters. And this is Peak Health.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Okay, I'm ready to be enlightened.
Okay.
What shall we talk about first?
Well, I was going to talk about female reproduction and how stress relates to that. So when we're stressed out, our bodies, obviously focus on the important things like running from the tiger or the cougar.
Cougar.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. A sheep the other night met its demise, could
serious?
Not run away. Yes,
yeah. Oh, I hate
right
hearing
on
about
Maury
that.
Island.
I hate hearing
it's
about
too
that.
Bad.
But let me just say this before we get serious here. We don't want to run when there's a cougar, even though we're stressed out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's the worst thing to do.
You're supposed to stand up tall,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Look it in the eye.
Yeah, we're still going to be stressed. We're just not going to be running.
But that's an okay kind of stress because that's fight or flight.
Yeah, it's an acute thing.
Acute, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. As opposed to chronic.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, back to what I was saying is when we're stressed out, our body is focusing on certain tasks and not others. And so reproduction is one that it is not focusing on because that is not a priority. And so, again, when we get stressed out, we release cortisol. That's the hormone we release. And cortisol actually prevents the release of other hormones that are important for reproduction. So I'm going to mention some scientific words, hypothalamus and pituitary. Those are parts of our brain that release hormones that help us in reproduction. And so those hormones allow for egg development and in the female, obviously, and then ovulation of the egg. And then also development of the lining of the uterus to allow for pregnancy to occur.
And interesting. And I've known several people that, you know, if they're interested in conception and they haven't been successful, and as soon as they adopt, than they conceive. So yeah, that would be like amazing. They stopped being so stressed about it. And
and then their brain started producing those hormones that they needed.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. To have that ovulation and all that good stuff.
Too bad we can't control it a little more easily, huh?
I know. Well, yeah. It's a challenging thing, I think, when a woman wants to have a baby and, you know, she feels stressed about it. But I mean, overall, I would just say, like, try to work on, you know, letting go and not being as stressed about getting pregnant, and maybe it will happen.
Let's hope.
Yeah. And then the other thing with female reproduction, and actually males too, is that libido goes down when we have excess stress hormones in our body. So because those hormones are made from the same precursor. And so when we have all these stress hormones being made, we're not making the other hormones. And so in relation to this is that certain areas of our body are more sensitive to touch when we have adequate sex hormones. When we're stressed, we don't have those adequate sex hormones. And so we have less sensitivity and we can have less pleasure with sex.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty huge. And, you know, huge thing to know that when we're super stressed out, we're not going to find as much pleasure in sex. And so that's talking about women, but...
Yeah, what about the guys?
Yeah. So men, they're much less complicated. Let's just say that. You know, women have the monthly cycle and the different hormones are higher at different times, whereas men, they're just... pretty steady state, their testosterone. They don't have a cycle of that. But when they do get stressed, their testosterone goes down. And, you know, that can lead to decreased libido. But the low testosterone, it doesn't affect fertility. There's not really a problem with the sperm or, you know, making sperm.
So stress does not affect making sperm.
Right.
You're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It can affect the libido, but not the sperm. So it doesn't really affect fertility. But I will say that the main problem with stress in men and you know, having children is that men can experience impotence or erectile dysfunction with stress. And so this kind of goes back to our same thing that we keep bringing up about the nervous system, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. And the sympathetic is that stress, fight or flight, stressful part of the nervous system. And then the parasympathetic is the rest and digest. And so men need to be in a parasympathetic state in order to get an erection. And so if he's chronically stressed with work or whatever's going on, it may cause a problem in getting an erection.
Interesting.
Yeah. So also I want to say that it might not just be stress. There are other causes for problems in getting an erection, and that would be vascular problems. So cardiovascular disease, what we call atherosclerosis, you know, where we talk about having plaque in your arteries. Well, the arteries that supply the penis that allow for an erection to take place can also have plaque in them, and that can prevent an erection to happen. And actually, when I was in school, I learned that it can be one of the first signs of heart disease is an inability to get an erection.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to say right here that, you know, this is maybe a sensitive topic for some people, and you're a doctor.
Yeah.
And probably come across this all the time, and I'm fine with it. And we'll just remember that this is all relating to negative impacts on us because of stress, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And particularly the female and the male reproductive system, which we've just been talking about at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just want to encourage our listeners, you know, if you do have problems having an erection, you know, to talk to your doctor and to make sure that heart disease is ruled out. And one clue that it isn't what we call organic or related to heart disease would be if you're still having nocturnal erections, because that means that the arteries are fine and the blood's getting in there. The reason that you're maybe having erectile dysfunction is due to stress during the, you know, when you're during the day when you're attempting to have sex.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so as I've said 15 times, stress seems to affect everything.
Yeah.
And so it can be sort of a psychological thing, or it can be a really organic, you know, physical thing.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
So, you know, when we think about health, I always think about your immunity, your immune system.
Yeah.
Is that influenced by stress?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's another big place that stress affects. And
can you talk about that for me a little bit?
Yeah, I will. So initially, when we have acute stress, our immune system is activated, and that's a good thing. But with chronic stress, the immune system can actually become overactive, and it can lead to autoimmune disease. And so we had an autoimmune disease show where we talked about you know, how in autoimmune disease, our immune system attacks our own tissues. And so this chronic stress can actually lead to autoimmune disease. I'll just say now for me, put in my story here, but I got diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease. Oh, I don't know. Was it like 10 years ago? But I got diagnosed several months after I was going through a divorce. And so it was a really stressful time in my life. And I started having symptoms and went into my doctor and got tested and found out that I had the autoimmune disease. And so it wasn't to say that the stress caused the autoimmune disease. You know, there's a lot more things that go into autoimmune disease, but it definitely was the trigger, I feel like.
Or it can at least exacerbate a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And we find that too, that people who have rheumatoid arthritis or, you know, MS, they get exacerbations when they have stress in their life.
So let's just say we don't want to worry about this, because we don't want to start stressing ourselves out about all the ways we can be stressed out and all the things that can influence in our body.
Yes, yes, it's true.
And just reminding everyone that we're listening to The Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9. This is Lisa Morse, Dr. Lisa Morse from Fern Cove Medicine, and Claire Denice from Positive Aging. And we are the Island Health Sisters. All right, Lisa.
Okay, so
I'm ready for some more.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about pain.
But I'm not
next.
Worried about it.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, good. You're just gathering information right
now. I am.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a good thing to do.
I'm breathing nicely, deeply.
Good. Okay, so pain. So what happens in pain is that there's a transmission of nerve signals from the body to the brain. And so, you know, something happens externally where we, you know, get a message, like maybe somebody hits us or something, and there's nerves that transmit a signal to our brain that there's pain. So with acute stress, sometimes what can happen is we get the release of a certain molecule or chemical called beta endorphin. And this is actually a natural form of morphine. And so I like to think about the example of a soldier who is shot in battle. They're in such an extreme stressful place that they get a lot of beta endorphin released, and they may initially not even experience the pain of the gunshot. And so, I mean, obviously later that beta endorphin is going to wear off, and they're going to be obviously in pain. But that acute stress, we can oftentimes tune out pain. However, with chronic stress, the pain pathways are accentuated. So those nerve pathways are actually hyper excitable, is what we say.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so it's not really a surprise that people who are chronically stressed, they have more pain due to those pathways being accentuated. So it's a problem.
I'm sort of speechless that it is so influential in so many different aspects of our health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, and I would also say that I'm surprised, maybe I shouldn't be, but that there's physical symptoms that happen that can lead to other things. And then there's also sort of the mind or the psychological influences that stress can have on us.
Yeah, yeah, it's a myriad of areas. Yeah. But I mean,
our brain, I guess, the different parts of our brain. And certain
I just
glands.
Think like, oh, pain. Well, pain, there's some kind of physical problem with my body, you know, like something's wrong with my joint or something's wrong with. And it's not necessarily always about that. You know, it can be due to stress.
And everything's related, seems like. Hip bones connected to the thigh bones.
That's right. Yeah. So pain is a big one.
Well, and I think pain is huge. You know, since I'm in the baby boomer generation, when things tend to start talking to you and not work quite as well.
Right.
We're often looking to alleviate that. Mm-hmm. So one good way to just begin would be to develop our stress toolbox. Management toolbox.
I agree.
That's our next show.
Yes, our next show. I know, we're just holding everyone in suspense here. Yeah. So the next thing I was going to say was learning and memory is affected by stress. And so in acute stress, actually, our learning and memory is better. We get more blood and more glucose to the brain. But in chronic stress, we actually, what happens is that a certain part of our brain called the hippocampus, it's that part of the brain is responsible for converting short-term memories to long-term memories. And so when we have chronic stress and chronically elevated cortisol levels, those neurons in the hippocampus actually atrophy, which means shrink. Hmm. And so our memory actually decreases with chronic stress. And in Alzheimer's disease, they found that actually the hippocampus is one of the first regions that becomes damaged.
So are they, I'm thinking with Alzheimer's, that they're looking at drugs that can either stop that process. Is this somewhat reversible if you become less stressed?
That's
not
a good
Alzheimer's
question.
Necessarily. But.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, I'm not sure about the drug. The drugs are not geared towards the hippocampus because there's a lot more, obviously, that goes on in Alzheimer's. But and then in regards to reversible, that's another good question. You have a lot of good questions, Claire. I'm not sure that it is. I would think so. The body is very resilient. But
well, I know that parts of the brain can take over functions when another part of the brain can no longer do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I don't know.
But it does definitely sound like if this doesn't convince people to work on stress reduction, nothing will.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If our two talks don't with all of us.
Yeah. Our when people talk about learning and memory and, oh, you know, my, you know, senior moment or I walked into the room and I can't remember why I'm in there. And then I did this and then I forgot about doing that. And, you know, 15 minutes later, you've done 10 things, but none of them were the original thing you wanted to do.
Right.
I don't know if that's due to stress. I've also heard that multitasking is not that good for us.
That's true.
I think I mentioned
that's
that
true.
In another
I think
show.
You mm-hmm. Yeah.
So learning and memory.
Yeah. So learning and memory. Another thing, impulse control. So stress affects, I just said stress affects the hippocampus, but it also affects another part of the brain, the cortex. And so the cortex is the main part of our brain. You know, when you see the pictures of the brain and have all the little squiggly convolutions, that's our cortex. And so there's different parts of the cortex. There's the frontal cortex, which is, you know, right behind our forehead, obviously. And that's the part of reasoning of our brain. It helps us to do the right thing. And so when there's excessive stress, the frontal cortex also atrophies or shrinks. And so, that frontal cortex develops up to age 25. And so it's thought that excessive stress in childhood, in the teenage years, when our cortex is developing, it may lead to lack of impulse control. And you know, maybe that the people that are in our prisons or jails, like they had an extremely stressful childhood and they, you know, their cortex did not develop as it should and they have lack of impulse control. And this is not to give, you know, let them off the hook and say, you know, it's just something to consider.
Well, it is interesting that there's so many ways that they can learn about the brain and the body these days that can benefit people long term.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always learning new things.
So impulse control.
Yeah.
I actually had a one of my children had to take a test one time and was low in impulse control.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
So they can measure these kind of things,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. It was my first exposure to that. So
Interesting. Interesting. All right. So it
seems like we're moving a little bit from below the neck to above the neck. Is
that how
possible?
We're doing it? Oh, seems so we've like, been doing, sort of. Well, kind of. Well, we were below. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. We were below.
We were talking about the physical, the torso, the body, the pain and so forth. Not that you can't have pain in your head, but, you know, when you start talking about impulse control and learning and memory, then it seems like that's into your brain more.
Yeah, that wasn't planned, but sure.
That's, okay. That's
so now we're on still up in the brain, so this is good.
So we don't have to plan everything, right?
No, that's right. So anxiety. So
that's, see, that proves my point.
Yeah,
that's above the neck, isn't it?
It is. It's true. I mean, it's
although you could have butterflies in your stomach.
That's true. So anxiety is a common problem today in our society, and this one, there's a part of the brain that plays a big part, and that's the amygdala. I don't know if anyone has heard of that part of the brain, but
I have. That's you have. The primitive brain.
Yeah.
The critter brain, the base of the brain.
Yeah. So it plays a big part in fear, when we have fear. And so when it gets stimulated, it actually increases anxiety. And so when we have excessive stress and we have that high cortisol hormone in our body, it actually stimulates the amygdala. Remember I said with the hippocampus, it kind of causes it to atrophy or shrink, but it's the opposite with the amygdala. It gets stimulated and it gets bigger. And so it can cause us to have higher anxiety than we normally would. So
I'm glad there are people like you that know all these subtle differences.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's subtle differences, but in the end, you know, it still comes back to, you know, what can we do to help our modulate our stress?
Which we're gonna... stay tuned.
Yes, exactly. So there's anxiety. And then also I wanted to talk about addiction. So when we get stressed, you know, we have high cortisol, but at the same time, that short-term stress increases our dopamine. And so dopamine is a feel-good hormone. It helps us feel good and feel happy. So short-term stress increases it. Great. However, chronic stress will deplete the dopamine in our body. And so in thinking about addiction, you know, usually someone is using a drug. You know, there's various drugs, alcohol and then other hard drugs, but different drugs affect different neurotransmitters. And so in talking about dopamine, we can talk about cocaine. So cocaine stimulates dopamine release. And so there's some reason, you know, maybe psychologically and physically, that someone reaches for cocaine. They may have low dopamine because they've had excessive stress in their life and their dopamine is depleted. Unfortunately, what happens when you do cocaine is that you have this massive release of dopamine and the receptors to the dopamine molecule downregulate. So basically, receptors are just these molecules on cells that the dopamine would bind to have its effect. But the body says, oh my goodness, there's so much dopamine around. We need to downregulate these receptors.
And I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
So then what happens is that you need more of it, more of the drug or more of the dopamine to get the effects because you have less receptors. So
do the receptors re-regulate once you get off?
I mean, in my physiology class, I just remember learning about this, and I would imagine them kind of just like shrinking into the cell membrane or something. I don't know if that's really what happens, but they can come back. Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And so one thing I wanted to mention is people who are adrenaline junkies. And then that's just a term. But basically, these people are thrill-seeking, risk-taking, and they enjoy doing these really risky activities. because it's that it's a stressful situation that releases dopamine. And so just like a drug addict, they have this excessive dopamine around and then the receptors downregulate. So, you know, it can be a physical drug or it could be,
so you'd have to seek bigger and higher thrills to get the same
scary
response.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. So, and then in someone who's addicted to drugs, when they don't have enough dopamine, their body becomes stressed. So then that will deplete more dopamine, and it's kind of
a vicious circle.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So, yeah. So I think just thinking about, you know, what is the reason that, you know, drugs were initiated in the first place, you know, and like I said, it's likely physical and psychological.
I think I was thinking just now that we're drawn towards pleasure as humanoids,
mm-hmm.
and we avoid pain. So if we are feeling pain, either some kind of physical pain in our body or something psychologically that's bothering us, we tend to want to alleviate that.
Yep.
The good news, I think, is that the various tools that we are going to talk about in our next show that people can use to alleviate chronic stress feel good.
Mm-hmm.
They feel good in a lot of different ways and can become the new habits so that we're not putting ourselves at such a high level of that chronic stress.
Mm-hmm.
That's affecting, you know, one person it affects digestion and maybe another person doesn't remember things or, you know, it's not like you'll get all those symptoms.
Right.
Everybody's different. But, and, you know, as you get a little towards, let's say even middle age, you know, your body, becomes a little more sensitive to a lot of things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, that's the time when we are taking on a lot more too. We have careers and we have families and we have, a lot of things that give us stress, starting with an alarm clock that buzzes at us the first thing in the morning. And so
you should get the light alarm clock. Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. It simulates sunrise. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Or maybe it starts making like lovely chimes and things to wake you up in the morning.
That could work too, but I think the light is the most natural.
Okay. All right. I'm willing to go with that.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to say about addiction.
Okay.
I just got to get this little part in here. So I was talking about drugs and things like that and being an adrenaline junkie, but also Facebook and the internet is the new drug. And that studies have found that every time, or email even, every time you get a little message or whatever on your face, a like or a comment on your post, you get a dopamine surge.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this is why it's so addictive. People are so addicted to Facebook and all that kind of stuff.
And the whole screen study thing where people are addicted to their screens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's because they're getting all kinds of dopamine and then their receptors are probably down regulating. So they need more.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a new journey to get back to where you were before you have those changes, huh?
Yeah. And then that's why oftentimes I will recommend to some of my patients, you know, that you do a 3-day
cleanse.
Yeah. Where you're not on your computer or your Facebook or your phone or whatever. Yeah.
I'll bet I think that would be kind of an interesting strategy, which we should talk more about and invite people to do and just see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, pick up the phone if you want to talk to someone.
Yeah,
I mean,
I love the
physical phone, not the texting phone.
Yeah. People don't even have those anymore, though. So,
but they could make a phone call.
Oh, on their cell phone.
As opposed to just texting. I don't know. Yeah, that's true. They don't have those.
Yeah.
They don't hardly even have phone booths anymore.
A lot of
things are going by the wayside.
It's true. Yeah. So I think we're going to wrap it up here.
Yeah, I just would like to say, you know, we didn't talk much about depression, but I'm mm-hmm. guessing that stress probably has some influence on that. But we don't want to become depressed just right. about all these ways that stress can be impacting our health.
Yeah.
'Cause there's hope.
There is hope. Yeah. I mean, despite, you know, how much stress you're going through now or, you know, the childhood stressors that you experienced, we can overcome those stressors with lifestyle interventions and tools. And so,
yeah, I think sometimes when I'm coaching people, I might say, well, that was then uh-huh. and this is now.
Right.
So there is a bridge between the two, obviously, and we want to keep the good if we can, but we want to let go of things that are no longer serving us.
Absolutely. Yep. So that's our next show. We're going to talk about
all right
tools.
Well, as always, it was great to visit with you, Lisa.
Yeah, it was.
And be on the radio together.
It was.
As the Island Health Sisters.
Yeah, this is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you desire. Until next time, take care of yourself.
You too, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.